Temna zvezda. Oddaja o filmu in skritih straneh filmskega vesolja. Vsak prvi in tretji ponedeljek v mesecu ob 8:30 zvečer.
Lepo pozdravljeni v novi temi zvezdi, v kateri bomo danes nekoliko bolj pastično obarvani. Postajali bomo namreč pri raznolikih filmskih dogodkih, ki so se bodisi že projicirali, bodisi bodo še nastopili na odrih filmskih luči. Naša današnja radijsko-filmska vektorska pot se bo torej zaustavljala na raznolikih postajah filmske estetike. Vstopna postaja bo filmsko-glasbeni doživljaj, ki se nam je zgodil 10. marca v španskih Borcih, v okviru organizacije Zavoda Sploh v soprodukciji Zavoda En knap. Tistega marčevskega večera smo si tako med drugim lahko ogledali projekciji dveh eksperimentalnih filmov legendarne Maje Deren, Atlant iz 1944. Leta in Meshes of the Afternoon iz leta poprej, ob živi glasbeni spremljavi Sebastiana Tramontana. V nadaljevanju se bomo zaustavili še pri retrospektivi Benoita Delfena in Gustava Kerberna ter pri predavanju Kate Genwarch o Charlieju Chaplinu. Maja Deren, ključno ime povojnega ameriškega neodvisnega filma, katere delo bi morda lahko še najbolje označili z oznako filmska poezija, sledeč teoretičarki Barbari Klinger, je tlakovala pot mnogim ustvarjalkam in ustvarjalcem neodvisnega filma. Pričemer Meshes of the Afternoon, ki ga je posnela s partnerjem Aleksandrom Hemidom, ostaja eden najbolj gledanih povojnih avantgardnih filmov. Meshes of the Afternoon, Curtis mu je, vključujoč celotno severnoameriško avantgardo, nadel sintagmo osebni film, spričo prvoosebnega diskurza oziroma osebne metafizike, ki podpisuje tovrstno filmsko govorico, skrožno strukturo, distinktivno rabo rakurzov in montaže, izrazujočih se filmski prostor in čas, za katerega se zdi, kot da nas prva stopita povzročita, da se v njuni razsežnosti izgubimo, potem pa nas novič izvržete nazaj, v nas same, v našo lastno izkušnjo, z rabo nekaterih arhetipskih psihoanalitičnih simbolov, preuprašuje strukturo realnega, simbolnega in imaginarnega. Še več, pravzaprav se zdi, kot da Maja Deren dobesedno izvrta luknje v realnost, s čimer pa slednjo postavi pod velik vprašaj. Kaj pa je v filmih Maje Deren povedala Barbara Hammer, režiserka eksperimentalnih filmov, predavateljica na European Graduate School, pri čemer se je dotaknila režiserkine metode in dela in pozicije ženske v zgodovini filma, pa tudi njenega vpliva na njeno lastno ustvarjanje.
I saw Maya Deren's Meshes of the Afternoon in my film history class with about 100 other students. There were three of us students, we were all girls, sitting there in the auditorium space, and we kept waiting for a woman cinema. We didn't see one other woman director. And I think the three of us in the room all went, yes, yes. And when I saw that, I knew that there was room for me in cinema. If this was the only woman I'd seen all semester, I should make cinema. Maya Deren developed a concept called vertical filmmaking. Vertical filmmaking for Maya meant that many emotions would be called forth from the viewer from a particular image or juxtaposition of images. All those things we can experience in one moment. Gertrude Stein writes about this too, another influence on my work. So I feel that Maya Deren started me thinking about how can I put my feelings in film.
Pravzaprav se zdi, kot da je Maja Deren bolj kot vsakdanjost zanimala vizualizacija notranjega sveta, sveta sanj vse skozi uhajajočega linearni strukturi časa. Torej tistega sveta, ki se kiti s cikličnim, mitskim, s tistim, ki se razteza v večnost in ki se nikoli ne preneha vračati. Tovrstno strukturo pa lahko zaznamo tudi v drugi projekciji tistega mačovskega večera, v filmu Atlant, prvovrstni manifestaciji samoiskanja, razpetega med koordinate narave, družbe in kulture, z vsemi pripadajočimi pomenskimi dimenzijami, v katerih pa sta med drugim sodelovala tudi John Cage in Parker Tyler. Preden pa se od uvodnega, sicer kratkega prispevka Maje Deren, ki smo ga pripravili kot odraz nadušujočega prisostovanja omenjenima projekcijama pred dobrim mesecem dni v španskih borcih poslovimo, naj le še dodamo, da smo si njeno filmsko vizijo v našem prostoru lahko že ogledali. Še pred leti v stari kinotekini dvorani, 3 leta nazaj pa je bila v okviru kinodvorovih kinozvočen nodih Luki Prinčičom, performansu z naslovom Oziranja Maje Deren. In še droben zaznamek. Če bi v Maji Deren želeli izvedeti kaj več, je v njej na voljo kar nekaj zanimivih monografij. Morda lahko za začetek pričnete z monografijo Billa Nicholsa z naslovom Maja Deren and American Avantgarde, v kateri boste lahko med drugim v celoti našli tudi ustvarjalkino knjigo Anagram ideje umetnosti, formi in filmu, ki je dolgo časa veljala za nedosegljivo. Nazadnje pa je vendarle bila dosegljiva v knjigarni Azil. Preden pa nadaljujemo s polno filmsko radijsko paro, na vse glasboljubce le še opozorimo, da je glasbena podlaga, ki je mimo bežala z izgovorjenim, Zornov podpis, pri čemer ga lahko najdete na Filmworks Volume 10 in The Mirror of Maya Deren.
Well, you heard about the time I climbed the Empire State Building and you heard about the time I was in the insane asylum.
Marca je v kinodvoru v sodelovanju z Demiurgom štartala kompletna retrospektiva filmov Benoita Delafena in Gustava Kverna, režiserskega dvojca, ki se nam je lani predstavil s filmom Louise Michel, izvrstno, predvsem pa subverzivno krilatico uporu peharjenega malega človeka, delavk in delavcev, stranine brzdane financializacijske logike špekulantnega globalnega kapitalizma. Avtorska dvojica, ki je očitno blizu jedko z črnega humorja, mestoma iztekajočega se v parodičen absurd, podmazanega z vrsto filmskih referenc, kot sta naprimer nadrealizem ter korizmakev filmski izraz, pa tudi preprašovanje filma v odnosu do nekaterih drugih umetnosti v svojih filmih, ki smo si jih imeli priložnost ogledati, razvija ta svoje vrstno, hibridizirano pripovedno formo, za katero se zdi, da ustreza tako imenovanemu filmu Ceste. Morda gre razloge za tovrsten avtorski pristop samoniklega oblikovanja pripovedne strukture iskati v njuni etični drži, ki jo izražata do svojih subjektov. Če tudi leti neprestano soočata s krutostjo brezbrižne realnosti, segajoče onkraj njih samih, otod morda tudi njun poudarek na izraziti fizičnosti, nekakšni usidranosti podob teles v filmski prostor, jim omogočata, da se prek lastnega angažmaja uprejo zoper silnice, ki jih zatirajo, tlačijo. A če Lee Hill naprimer pravi, da v številnih filmih Ceste po Easy Riderju kot prototipu za dano filmsko formo liki le redko prispejo na cilj oziroma najdejo, kar so iskali, pričujočo kratko misel oziroma navedbo povzemamo iz diplomskega dela Urbana Tarmana z naslovom Značilnosti ameriškega filma Cesta, slednje ne moremo trditi za že omenjen Louise Michel, ki se izteče v transgresijo obstoječega družbenega reda.
My heart. Well, you heard about this.
Vendarle pa je le moč reči, da vsaj Altra in Mamuth preigravata nekatere najbolj značilno konstitutivne elemente omenjene pripovedne strukture, saj so prav nenadni zavoji na eliptični poti samoiskanja osrednjih likov tisti, ki ne le da nam razkrivajo obličja osod protagonistov, marveč nam prav z meandrskimi zasuki zgodbe, strukturirane okoli tako rekoč epizodnih absurdiziranih skečev o družbi današnjega časa povedo več, kot pa si morda sami upamo priznati. Sledeč temu bi lahko dejali, da so filmi omenjenega dvojca izrazito aktualni. So filmske intervencije podpisane z jasno izraženo socialno senzibilnostjo do obdobja, v katerem smo priča dekompoziciji nekaterih temeljnih strukturno-produkcijskih kodov, pri čemer pa Delfin in Kerven slednje dosegata z vzpostavitvijo atipične distance, ki pa je v funkciji oblikovanja ptiče, potujitvene perspektive filmskega pogleda na realnost našega časa. Prisluhnimo sedaj pogovoru med prevajalko in Delfinom, ki je bil tudi gost na premierah Altre in Mamutha v Kinodvoru, pri čemer se je beseda dotaknila načina organizacije snemanja, pa tudi sodelovanja s Korizmakijem.
Od televizijskih serij, satirične, ki se jih posneli. Kako si delita delo? Oba dva nastopata, igrata v filmu, pišete scenarije skupaj, na koncu se podpišete pod režijo. Kako se v bistvu vse to dogaja? Alors, comment ça se passe avec Gustave Kerven? Vous connaissez depuis, depuis un petit moment, depuis une série télévisée. Et puis, vous jouez dans le film, vous écrivez le scénario ensemble, vous signez la réalisation tous les deux. Comment ça se passe comment ça se passe pendant les festivals hein? Aujourd'hui, vous êtes venu avec
C'est une aventure comme ça, en commun, mais... Enfin, notre façon de travailler est plus proche de groupes de rock que de cinéastes. Quoi. Enfin, on imagine toujours le cinéaste comme un espèce de commandeur qui dit « toi tu fais ça, toi tu fais ça ». Nous c'est un peu différent. Enfin, on est comme un espèce de groupe de rock sur la route. Quand il se trouve c'est nous qui trouvons les histoires, qui trouvons, on est à la base de l'imaginaire de la chose, mais c'est plutôt une aventure collective. Enfin, un film c'est une aventure collective.
Film je v bistvu ena taka kolektivna izkušnja, skupna izkušnja in midva v bistvu, ko delava z Gustavom, ne delava na način režiserju, ti boš naredil to, ti boš naredil ono, ampak v bistvu sva bolj kot ena rokerska skupina, pač vse se skupaj dogovoriva in izpeljava.
Sur ce film-là, par exemple, on était vraiment, enfin, une toute petite équipe, mais il y a eu beaucoup de choses qui sont arrivées pendant le tournage, quoi. Enfin, c'est-à-dire que, par exemple, Korizmaki, on n'était pas sûr, il nous avait dit oui, parce que... enfin bon, on lui avait remis dans notre émission Groland, qui est un pays qui n'existe pas, mais enfin, bon, bref, dans notre show télévisé, on lui avait remis la médaille des arts et des lettres, quoi. C'est-à-dire que, en France, c'est les arts et les lettres, mais Groland, c'est la médaille des arts et des lettres, c'est très difficile à traduire, je suppose.
V bistvu tudi za kar se tiče Ankija Korizmakija, ki v bistvu nismo vedeli, ali se ga bo dalo dobiti za film ali ne, ampak smo ga v bistvu dobili potem ravno prek teh televizijskih oddaj o Grenlandu, te izmišljeni deželi, ki jo predstavljamo na televiziji. In v bistvu smo Ankija Korizmakija dobili tako, da smo mu podelili medaljo Les arts et les litres, se pravi umetnost in litri, namens les arts et les lettres, se pravi umetnost in literatura. In na ta način je pristala.
Donc on lui a remis cette médaille, donc on a sympathisé avec lui, enfin il nous a pris pour des branleurs, mais bon, c'est pas grave.
Pač na tak način smo ga dobili, torej podelili smo medaljo, ne, in pač imel nas je za take malitetne, ampak dobro. No?
Donc il a accepté de tourner dans le film, mais en fait, pendant le tournage, comme on a vraiment tourné dans l'ordre, on est parti de France, comme ça, on a tourné, puis on a avancé vers la Finlande, et on a appris en Allemagne qu'ils ne voulaient plus tourner pour nous. Enfin, complètement changé d'avis, on ne sait pas pourquoi. C'est un ours, quoi.
V bistvu je tak medved, on ne pač sprejel je takrat, ko smo bili na Finskem, ne, in smo snemali v bistvu sprejel to, da je snimal z nami, da potem pa, ko smo mi nadaljevali naše snemanje do Francije, jo v bistvu smo slišali, da je rekel, da sploh noče več sodelovati z nami in da je bilo to.
Et, quand, et nous, mais le problème, c'est qu'on avait déjà prévu notre voyage et on avait déjà, enfin, on s'est dit, bon, on y va quand même. De toute façon, on, tant pis. Enfin.
Nous sommes, en fait, parce que nous avons déjà tout après prévu, que nous allons aller à Finsko, nous avons dit, ok, on va aller au centre, si c'est en prémisse.
Et on a fini le dernier jour de tournage par aller manger dans un restaurant, mais dans son village, à côté de chez lui. Mais on, il ne tournait pas, quoi. Donc on n'avait pas notre scène de fin, il n'y avait pas la fin. Quoi.
Et au bistro, potem smo se pač odpeljali v vas, kjer on živi.
Et on était pendant le repas dans ce restaurant, et tout à coup, à la fin du repas, il est apparu alors que on ne l'attendait pas du tout.
Et au bistro, pač, ker on si že premislil, ni hotel nastopati, smo pač bili tam, in pač nismo mogli posneti zadnjega prizora, ampak ko smo sedeli v restauraciji, ne, se je on vseeno pojavil.
Il ne nous a pas du tout dit un mot, il est resté assis, il nous a tous regardés, nous a... enfin, c'était super
bizarre.
On a continué à manger, à boire normalement, mais on était quand même un peu gênés quand on se dit « qu'est-ce que c'est que ce dingue ?»
Mi smo potem pač naprej jedli in pili, ne, ampak je, smo se rekli, no, to pa je zdaj ta norc, ne.
Et à la fin du repas, il a dit, il a levé la main, c'est la première fois qu'il parlait, il a dit un truc en finlandais, il a dit, c'est pour moi, enfin, en gros, il a payé l'addition, il a dit, parce qu'il y a une tradition, hein. En Finlande, ce sont toujours les acteurs qui payent la note du repas.
In v bistvu na koncu obroka, ne, je samo dvignil roko in rekel, ne, to je name, ne, ker obstaja pač neka finska tradicija.
Ça voulait dire qu'il avait l'humour et surtout qu'il tournait dans notre film.
In v bistvu dvignil roko, ne, pač in rekel, to je name, ne, pač plačam, ker obstaja finska tradicija tega, da pač igralec plača rumno.
Še to. Jutri ob 7 si lahko v Kinodvoru ogledate še en film omenjenega režiserskega para. In sicer Avido, na rednem sporedu pa vas še vedno čaka Mamut. Počasi se premikamo v zadnji del današnjega radijskega druženja, v katerem vam bodo na posluh dani krajši izseki drugega predavanja Kate Gainsborough, dolgoletne predsednice Chaplinove pisarne, odgovorne za promocijo in distribucijo Chaplinovih del. Sicer se nam je predavateljica, velika ljubiteljica in poznovalka Chaplina, predstavila že dan poprej, no sobotno zgodnje popovdne pa je takisto pred kinotečnim poslušalstvom nizala odgovore na predavateljsko-problemsko vprašanje zgoščeno v naslov – Polučeh velemesta, politika ali otok Bali. Preden pa se prepustimo zanimivim predavateljičinim besedam, povejmo še, da se je predavanje simbolično odvilo na 122. obletnico Chaplinovega rojstva. Organizirano pa je bilo v sklopu velike Chaplinove marčevsko-aprilske retrospektive, ki se bo iztekla z matinejskima klasikama, Luči velemesta in moderni časi. A ne bodite preveč žalostni, meseca maja v kinoteko namreč prihaja Dušan Mekavejev, ki pa ga brčas ni potrebno posebno predstavljati. Pa se vrnimo nazaj k danes predstavljenem predavanju. Slednje je bilo organizirano na način historične metode, saj nam je nosilka predavanja postopno preko skrbno izbranega arhivskega materiala razkrivala ne le Chaplina kot intimno osebo, marveč njegovo razpetost na poklicni poti, ki se je dotikala zlasti Chaplinovih dvomov v zvezi s prihodom zvočnega filma in njegove želje po udostovanju politiki, več pa predavateljica.
I had always assumed that when Chaplin had finished City Lights in 1931, he had just had a very long holiday. But I now realized that this was a crucial crisis point in his life where he may even have been contemplating other careers, and in particular, a career in politics. The second half of the 1920s was a very depressing time for Chaplin. His second marriage to Lita Gray, in spite of the birth of his two sons, was taking a turn for the worse. While he was working on his film The Circus, the studios were destroyed by fire. In November 1926, his wife left him, taking their two sons with her. She very publicly filed for divorce in January 1927, and her complaint, with all its accusations of what she termed unnatural bedtime activities, was published as a leaflet for the whole of America to read. Work on The Circus was suspended during the divorce proceedings. Chaplin also had to deal with an issue with the Inland Revenue, which terminated in his being forced to pay $1 million in back taxes in April 1927, over and above a large divorce settlement. The studios actually went into receivership, work temporarily suspended under receivership. For many months, the studios were closed pending the divorce settlement. And between December 1926 and June 1927, a guard was put on the studio gates by the receivers and the studios were closed. The Circus was finally premiered in January 1928, a silent film. And sound had already arrived with The Jazz Singer, which had been on the screens 3 months before that. Chaplin almost immediately started work on City Lights, which was to take nearly 3 years to complete. A few months later in July, the first ever all-talking picture was released by Warner called The Lights of New York. And Chaplin hadn't got past the note-taking stage for his own City Lights film. Another blow, in August 1928, his mother died. In December 1928, a company board meeting discussed at length the fact that there was a problem. Should the picture be silent or sound?
Dvomi pa niso razjedali le Chaplina, marveč tudi studijske šefe, širšo javnost. V posnetku boste tako lahko slišali takšne in drugačne težave, ki so pestile Chaplina.
It's necessary to progress slowly in order to ascertain the pulse of the public in so far as its appreciation and acceptance of the so-called talking motion picture is concerned. Is it safe to proceed without a talking edition of the current picture? A couple of weeks after this meeting, Charlie actually started the shooting of City Lights. At the end of December 1928, when sound pictures were in cinemas all around him, he had, of course, envisaged dialogue. I'm sorry, that's not very clear, but it says, it's one of the speeches for the opening scene where the mayor is talking to the public, and it says, "Ladies and gentlemen, it is with great pleasure and admiration that I introduce these charming ladies, Mrs. Boodlebottom, Phil Barnutt, and Mrs. Putt." But he still didn't know which way to go. Further problems came to add to his doubts. From February to April 1929, he was sick with food poisoning, and then flu. As Alfred Reeves so rightly puts at the end of this letter, the picture will not be ready for quite some time. In June, the Los Angeles Town Council decided to widen the road. So it's just extraordinary. The studio buildings had to be sort of dug up and moved back a few feet. I think there's another picture. All the buildings were moved, and they were trying to shoot a film inside, but everything was being moved back a few feet so that the road could be widened. So during this building work, as you can imagine, the film set became a more and more stressful place. At the end of June, Henry Clive was replaced by Harry Myers in the role of the rich man. In September, Charlie fired Harry Crocker, who was his assistant director, who had worked with him all through the story writing stage, and during The Circus before that. In November, he even replaced Virginia Cherryl with Georgia Hale, the heroine of The Gold Rush. And he shot a few scenes with Georgia Hale as the blind girl, and then ended up by taking Virginia back a while later. In November, he replaced a cameraman. So he's gone through everybody, everything is not right, and now even the picture doesn't look right. In October, there was another board meeting of the Charles Chaplin Film Corporation, which was still very uncertain about the silent picture. There was great doubt as to the way in which this film might be received by the public. And maybe the company shouldn't distribute dividends this year, but keep all its profits to make another movie in case this film flopped. Many press articles were speculating on Chaplin's own future in the world of sound. He wrote, "In the past, my work had usually stimulated interest among producers, but now they were too preoccupied with the success of the talkies, and as time went on, I began to feel outside of things." By the time City Lights was finished, The Blue Angel, Sous les Toits de Paris, All Quiet on the Western Front had been and gone. Sound was here for good, and Charlie was premiering a silent movie. Nevertheless, the Los Angeles premiere went very well.
Luči velemesta so bile na kljub težavnosti približevanja javnosti izjemen uspeh. Chaplin pa je postajal vse večja zvezda. Družil se je z intelektualnim, aristokratskim, političnim in ekonomskim jet setom tistega časa. Še bolj opogumljen za nadaljevanje svoje kariere v politiki, z namenom vzpostavitve enakopravnejšega, pravičnejšega sveta. Chaplin je namreč veliko študiral politično ekonomijo s ciljem po iskanju rešitev za veliko gospodarsko krizo, ki se je zažirala v celotno družbeno polje tistega časa. Predvsem pa je Chaplina še naprej razjedal notranji ustvarjalni dvom. Prisluhnimo njegovim besedam.
Since the innovation of sound in movies, I couldn't determine my future plans. Although City Lights was a great triumph and had made more money than any talking picture at that time, I felt that to make another silent film would be giving myself a handicap. Also, I was obsessed by a depressing fear of being old-fashioned.
Namesto, da bi odšel nazaj Hollywood na delo, se je Chaplin namenil Veliko Britanijo, kjer se je družil z Gandhijem, Churchillom, z Lady Astor. Često pa se je zamaskiran udeleževal političnih shodov, predvsem pa se je želel na lastne oči prepričati o turobni realnosti delavskega razreda. Prav na tej točki se je po mnenju predavateljice izražala njegova razpetost med filmom in politiko, kar pa bi bilo možno pripisati njegovim notranjim strahovom pred prihodom zvočnega filma. Chaplinovo iskanje samega sebe se je pravzaprav odvijalo vse posod, le v Kaliforniji ne. Še vedno se intenzivno ukvarja s politično ekonomijo, z bratom Sidnjem, s katerim sta skupaj preživljala veliko časa, pa se spustita na avanturo na otok Bali, kjer Chaplin ugotovi, da njegov humor deluje tudi tu, kjer mu zvezdniška senca ne sledi. A navkljub obširnim Chaplinovim zapiskom za tako imenovani projekt Bali, se zdi, da Chaplin pravzaprav ni prav dobro vedel, kam naj usmeri projekt. Kar pa je vedel, je bila želja posneti zvočni film. Pa vendar, po besedah Kate Genworth je bila balijska izkušnja za Chaplina izjemno dragocena, kajti prinesla mu je tako želeno notranjo spokojnost. A prisluhnimo raje predavateljici oziroma posnetku zaključka njenega sobotnega predavanja, ki ne le povzame njegovo srčiko, temveč nam postreže z enim pomembnejših trenutkov v zgodovini filma.
Preparing this talk, I became convinced that when he began his holiday because of the advent of sound in film, Chaplin was worried that he would have to give up making films altogether after City Lights and that he may even have been thinking of a career in British politics instead. Perhaps his prolonged time with Douglas Fairbanks in St. Moritz and then the prolonged stay in Bali at the end of his world tour gave him a chance to settle, revived his creativity and restored his faith in the human race. And perhaps the hilarity of the island people he so admired, laughing at his comic antics, restored his faith in the power of pantomime. This did not prevent him from being in a very political mode on his return to America, when he released his idea for an economic situation, economic solution, as was described by Sidney in his letter. Soon after his return, he met Paulette Goddard, and I also think that she probably played a large part in convincing him that what he did best was filmmaking, and that he could actually combine economics, writing, and his political interest, and films. And of course, he went on to do exactly that in modern times. The enormous success of City Lights in spite of having been a silent movie, proved that he'd been right all along anyway, and the board of directors shouldn't have been worried about the film's success. Charlie returned to Bali a few years later with Paulette Goddard. Cocteau said in an interview that Chaplin and he had a plan to meet there together to make a film at the end of the 1930s, but the war intervened. So in the 1930s, he did Modern Times, and yet he was still playing with all these other, was he going to do Bali, was he going to do Napoleon, was he going to do Regency? And then in 1937, there was a call in the American press for Chaplin to make a peace film. An Ohio reader of The Spectator suggested that Chaplin should cast his little man as a universal victim of the insanity of war and give us the peace picture the world is waiting for. Chaplin would play the leading role. Somebody wrote to a newspaper in Ohio, and this was taken up in a Hollywood paper, and this editor wrote and confirmed it, that it would be wonderful that if Chaplin's genius and talent could be used to produce a satire on war, and would point at the munitions makers, the international diplomats, politicians, stuffed shirt dictators, moguls of finance who want police protection for their properties abroad, etc., etc. The people would laugh, but under those laughs would be exposed the bitter realization of the folly and futility of wars in general. Only Chaplin could produce a picture that would accomplish these objectives. We know that there were many cartoons in the press all through the 1930s comparing Chaplin and Hitler, so I'm not saying that these articles in the press gave him the ideas to do the dictator, but it must have been quite... must have supported him. Maybe he'd already had the idea before, I don't know that. Perhaps he was already contemplating, but anyway, the rest is history. And if I think back to his 18-month prolonged holiday when he was desperate with worry as to what would become of him and his career and how he could ever go back to Hollywood and make films, and was even considering becoming a politician and staying in England, I can only admire how incredibly ingeniously he came to combine both film and politics in this wonderful film.
In nastal je veliki diktator. Današnjo oddajo sem pripravila Nina Cvar, za tehnično realizacijo pa je poskrbel Sreč.
Temna zvezda. Oddaja o filmu in skritih straneh filmskega vesolja. Vsak prvi in tretji ponedeljek v mesecu ob 8:30 zvečer.